you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Talking Monkeys. You're welcome. Your favorite show about your favorite show, 12 Monkeys on Sci-Fi Channel. My name is Clark Wolf. Thank you so much for listening. I have a wonderful group of heathens with me today.
Whoa.
Oh, boy. I just ate a muffin, so I'm feeling very energized.
And hedonistic.
Yes, indeed. To my left, I have...
A meat muffin.
What?
Imagine she will just said meat muffin on the record.
What a good hashtag meat muffin.
That is
muffin
the name
people.
Of her band. So.
To be fair,
meat muffin.
I mean, she does have the T-shirt on.
Yeah.
So, without further introduction, we have Miss Amanda Shule.
Hi.
And we have Mr. Todd Stashwick.
Hello.
And we have Mr. Terry Metalis.
Hi.
All right, this is our penultimate episode, you guys.
Blood washed away.
Oh, boy. Y'all,
Let's just jump in.
Let's just jump
let's
in.
Guys,
do it.
They kissed.
What?
Oh, hello? But everybody died.
Oh.
And wrap the podcast.
Is that what the audience has been waiting for this whole time? That's what they wanted. They wanted them to kiss and everybody died and the show to end.
I will say that I didn't necessarily want... For me, I was happy that they finally just said it.
Yeah.
For God's sake. You know what I mean? Like,
you're in love with me.
I love you.
I've always known, yeah.
Exactly. Fine. I love you too. Great.
And she grabs him and kisses him. And for those who have been... having a hard time with Cassie, that was the moment I wanted to earn this year, was she's the one who grabs him and kisses him. She is the one who makes that overture. She is the one who now, faced with the thing they never had, which is time, jumps in and embraces how they feel. And unfortunately, it happened to coincide with the death of all their friends. And I'm sorry about that. But Jennifer did warn them not to go the Titan. Ramsay has always been filled with rage and blind with fury. And
when did Jennifer warn them? Jennifer told Cole.
She told Cole, but then Cole told Ramsay. He's like, Jennifer told me there's nothing but death there. And Jennifer's been with them the whole time. So I mean, on for that year long journey. So they know.
But does young
Jennifer
know
that? And Deacon's like, why would you walk towards the weird music? Nothing about this is a good idea.
For those who can't hear Todd laughing at his own joke.
It's a bad sign when the voices of reason are Deacon and Jennifer.
It's very, very true. Well, and also, even Hannah comes back and goes, guys, nothing there. I mean, even though I don't want to say, but there was something there when they got there.
Yes.
Right? But, you know, part of me, too, is like, if somebody scouts the location is like, there's nothing there, then why do you go and say...
Maybe they weren't wearing their bifocals that day or something.
That's possible.
You know?
Hannah didn't have her glasses on.
We know Jones wears glasses. So
it could have been. And Hannah wears that weird scarf thing. Maybe she had it pulled up too high.
Maybe.
And she just didn't see the giant facility there in the woods. She pulled her bandana over
her
eyes.
Oh, I was wearing my bandana on my eyes. Let's go look again.
Oh, guys, wait a second. I just made this mistake.
This is what's become of the podcast now. Todd eating while we're podcasting.
Amanda Shule brought in
by the finale
pound cake. It's not my fault.
By the finale, we will be drunk.
Todd, don't lie. You're eating a meat muffin. We all know it. Mm-hmm. Let's just go crazy. So we're here in the world. We're here in 2044. This is a brutal, savage, horrible place. And they're out there. They knew it would be.
They've been out there for a year crossing
the country.
There's
cannibalism going on. I mean, this is the apocalypse as worst case scenario imagined.
It's very bad.
And they've been at it for a year, and lots of people have died along the way, and Jennifer
is clearly... They didn't have razors. A lot of them look really scruffy. Some people look
one of them
like
had a big red eye.
Yep. Deacon's got a scar. That.
Yep.
From
and
Hannah.
And the daughters are just...
But I like that the emissary is like ready to kill Deacon, and Jennifer's like, no, don't. I get to choose what happens. And I love how respectful Deacon is to her.
Oh. Yes, this was a wonderful, like, I loved this turn, and I loved, because it was a, you know, I've said throughout the whole season, too, that, like, I was very wary of Deacon, kind of.
You're supposed to be.
You know, yeah, exactly, and it worked, but I see where he is, and I get it, and you know, I would trust him in this situation.
He calls her ma'am.
He feels like an interesting jerk, probably.
Well, he's also known her as an old woman forever.
That's true.
Like, even though he only had those two scenes.
With the actress. But Deacon had scenes with... Deacon's known old Jennifer for a long time.
I also just want to point out that the women who are her daughters who have been giving old Jennifer respect for presumably decades at this point.
She probably raised them, right?
Right.
Yeah.
She freed them, feeds them, and now she leads them. But
put that on a shirt.
Put it,
That's actually from Hyena. You need to see that episode. Yeah.
Todd doesn't watch his own show. What's interesting about Deacon's respect is that she's not getting it from the people she should be getting it from.
Right.
You know, there's yet again another flip on the show, which makes for really interesting viewing.
It's fascinating.
Yeah.
And Ramsay's just getting into fights and
he
trouble
is
with everybody.
Off the rails.
Yeah, he's
and you know, this
try
is,
not
this
to die.
Is Ramsay, this is Ramsay.
Impression of me.
Ramsay at his darkest, you know, and they've been at this for a year, and, you know, it's impossible to talk with Amanda gyrating in the bizarre
way. Amanda's doing her impression of Deacon.
I was impersonating Deacon, and apparently.
Not how I see Deacon.
It looks like he's doing the
hula hoop. She's actually oddly accurate.
And Jennifer, you know, what's so cool, I think, too, is we see Jennifer is not the old mother yet.
No.
She is not the leader. I love when she pulls out the...
She's the egg.
Or she says, well, what's she say, it's better to have a hen today than a chicken tomorrow or something like that. And it cuts to Todd. Good. And he's like,
Oddly makes sense.
That's the only one. He's the only one who respects her at this point. Yeah, it's a great moment.
I was saying before, even in season one, with the white powder that he puts on Cole, like, that he got it from the daughter. So, there's been a relationship between the West Seven and the daughters. So he's been aware of, known about her, and then to be the guy that was responsible for her death.
Exactly.
And then to meet the young version of her, knowing where she's going to eventually end up, and it's his fault. Like, there's so many weird... Because he doesn't kill indiscriminately. Never has. Mm-hmm. He's never been that guy. He's always killed for a reason. Loved doing it.
Right.
But he's always killed for a reason, and this was a complete accident, and he didn't want to be a part of that. He wanted Ramsay dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. No such, well, and not by his own hand.
Unfortunately, that happened, but Deacon.
He also got deaded.
I didn't get to be the one doing it.
That's true.
I love that sunset shot when you guys find Titan.
Oh, that's the Wizard of Oz shot.
Yeah, just, and they're like, and yeah, it's, and you guys go running, turn the music is all great. And I love the, we finally know what Olivia's Red Forest prayer was all about. Was about this moment in time that Cole and Cassie would be stuck back at the house and that moment. I love shooting at that house because it's so iconic and weird and eerie and cool. And
is that a real house or is it a stage?
No, that's
a
real house.
Where is it?
Ontario,
Canada?
Somewhere.
It's about an hour out of Toronto.
Yeah,
which was...
we saw it last year. We went and shot there for your first Red Forest vision from the beginning. It was always been this house. We were lucky it's still up.
Yeah, they were demolishing it shortly after we shot there. But it's funny because that house is sort of plopped in the middle of this empty land and there's nothing around totally beautiful. But then there's a highway right there also. So we were holding up traffic, doing all of our exterior stuff.
Yeah.
But there's just this house just there alone. But then the dichotomy of just like the world sort of creeping in is kind of metaphorical for, you know, their lives as well.
So, all right, speaking of, let's talk about 1957.
Yeah.
We spent a lot of time there, a year, essentially. Do we get to... No, 2 years. There's a lot of progression in this episode that happens. It really is. So basically, Cole and Cassie, they splinter back. They know that they have 11 months to find this primary, and their goal is to prevent the primary basically from paradoxing.
Even if they have to kill him.
Yeah. So they go through.
Or her.
It, or her, exactly. So they go through everyone who works at this factory. They get jobs there, which I... So I wanted to ask you, Amanda, specifically. You know, we've seen Cassie's evolution over basically two full seasons at this point. And now... And she's a woman who is living in our modern day when we first meet her, right? 2016, 2015. She's a doctor. She's accomplished. And we... She's put in the situation in the 50s with like work office politics and like a really creepy, skeezy boss and all this stuff. And I just wanted to know how it was. I mean, obviously you play those scenes and like, you know what you're, but like that must have been so confusing or such like a mind game for.
Well, I think
Cassie.
Cassie role plays a bit when she goes on these missions. So sure. This is not something that is totally foreign to her. There, she does have a secret, which is that any of these men who disrespect her,
sure.
She could snap the neck of very quickly.
Yep.
Which she, what were you going to say, Terry?
Because
I saw you bring the mic up to your mouth out of the corner of my eye.
It was so defensive in the way you said, what are you going to say, Terry?
Well, because I was on my nap snacking.
Nap snacking? Children.
Amanda's gone bye-bye. The,
I had so much caffeine.
No, Roger. I just love Roger.
Roger.
Did he
that
play
guy,
the
that guy with the mustache? He was
the
so
boss.
Great.
Yeah, the boss was the sweetest man. It's
yeah.
funny because there is a scene where
he's
supposed to just
yeah.
grab my butt,
but
he was so tentative, and he was like, "I'll just put it here," and I could feel like the
but it
warmth
made it
from his hand.
In a weird way,
yeah,
it was
did,
creepier, like
was.
How lightly he put it kind
yeah.
of on your ass.
But
not.
We're doing it in rehearsal, and he's like, he's just putting it kind of in the vicinity of where my bottom might be, kind of a deal, because he's not a creepy perv
aww.
Himself.
Bottom.
And I was like, you can just Roger, just you know,
grab at.
It's okay.
I give you permission.
Yeah.
So meanwhile, poor Cassie is being felt up by all of these 1950s men,
to be fair, it was actually just the
which is,
one
it's going
to
be its own spin-off.
That we know.
That we saw. You're right.
Okay. But Cole, meanwhile, has made friends with a dude named Charlie.
Charlie's a bad man.
Frickin' Charlie.
Well, he's not a bad man. I think actually Charlie's story.
He's one of the
cool.
more sympathetic primaries, I think, that we've
messenger
or messengers
messenger.
That
yeah,
we've
that
met.
He turned on them at one point. It was like, I'm not going to do this. I love this woman too much, and killed the other messenger he came there with.
Yeah,
but then ultimately was convinced by the primary because they're crazy.
Yeah,
that this was the right thing to do, and. Paradox City.
And I noticed too.
Take me down to the Paradox City.
Oh my God, that's going to be on the soundtrack next.
Paradox City.
Beautiful.
We'll get Kelsey Carter to do it.
Why do you need somebody else? I just did it right here.
She just nailed it.
I
you just
Kelsey
take that
Carter.
Audio and put it in. Okay, but I did want to ask Terry about there's some fun little Nimrods and like funny little 50s. Like
Sean.
So, yeah.
That's all Sean Tretta doing that. Yeah.
Was
Nimrod
it?
Was one. I mean, it just Sean. Just he's really good. Sean writes weird stuff like Agent Gale lines, like
uh-huh.
Bum hairs.
Yeah, bum hairs. And then Cole asks like bum hairs in a drain, and then I wrote, "That's colorful."
That's colorful.
we're taking it back to episode 210.
Yeah, we're
with that
well,
dialogue.
It's fun to write this show.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, that's Sean just digging in and finding all that great vernacular.
So another thing I want. Okay, so let's get back to Charlie and the as a messenger and his primary. So this woman comes into the factory where they live. Oh, by the way, I shouldn't gloss over that. Cassie figures out towards the day labor. Duh. They've spent 11 months living together. And...
They've spent 11 months, and we learn that they weren't easy months.
Yeah,
he was on the couch. They're frustrated. They're pent up, frustrated, and they can't.
But they know each other really well. I love where she just walks over and she goes sober.
Like, yeah.
Yep. Like it's been like it's had a bunch. They've had a lot of these conversations. And that
it's a
leg
marriage,
shot,
but it's a yes.
It's a great leg shot.
Very
it really is.
Yes. The gams. The gams on display.
We don't do that with Cassie though.
No.
We rarely get to do anything like that. It's cool to do it in that sort of time period too.
Yes.
There's a romance to it all.
But rats, what was I gonna say?
Rats.
That it's been a hard time.
Are you Lucy Van Pelt?
Rats is one of my favorite. But
that's a good one.
I was going to ask about, no, they're living together. It hasn't been easy. It kind of felt like a marriage. Do you know what I mean? Like, it felt like two people.
There's no romance to this situation.
I mean, I'm not married. I don't know. But it did feel like a marriage that they knew each other for a very long time. They'd been married a very long time.
They're working parents, both of
basically,
them.
Basically, yeah.
They barely see each other. They're stressed out. Yeah. They're roommates. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So this woman shows up with the gun, the Pratt and Mary, and Charlie, they figure it out kind of just in time. And Cole kind of hesitated a little. Did I read that wrong in this scene? Because obviously he doesn't shoot Charlie. He could have, but he didn't.
Yeah, he's a softie.
Yeah. Is that what happened?
Yeah. Well, could he shoot him without he's close enough to her. He might still paradox.
Is that the...
Yeah, he's holding the thing. Like, he could get shot and then go, goom.
Got it.
So it's all better to talk him down, I think, at that moment.
So paradox happens, and...
the worst one of them all?
Yeah, it's no good. And Cassie wakes up in a hospital, Cassie is in the hospital. Cole says goodbye. You're better off without me.
I love this montage of her.
Talk a little bit about it.
Well... Suddenly you're going back into all that red forest stuff in her head, and then this time passage, and then he's gone. The music's so cool. And then she becomes a doctor again, kind of finds herself
again.
Mm-hmm. A nurse, but she's
trying
to...
doing the doctoring.
She's, but before...
Lyme disease, potato disease, or watermelon disease.
I love that guy. But but what's nice is she's not like out, you know, she found what she's... good at and is still trying to help the world in some way, and until she finds Morris Morrison.
She's been looking for Morris Morrison this whole time.
Yep.
She's trying to find him this whole time.
And then there's the house moment, which I think is one of my favorite moments of the series, when she pulls up and finally sees the house. And you're
such
like,
a great scene.
Oh, shit.
There's had to have been so much emotion going on there, too, considering for Cassie, she hadn't seen Cole. She felt like he left her, essentially.
He abandoned her. Yeah. He didn't leave a note. That when Cassie wakes up, and the first thing she does is ask for Cole. Mm-hmm. Where is he? Where's Cole? And there's a possibility nobody survived, but she suspects he's out there somewhere. And she's been looking for him this whole time since she came to. When she gets back, though, to the hotel, she scans and realizes he's taken everything mm-hmm. of his stuff mm-hmm. and he's gone. So at that point, it's confirmed that he's alive. He's just
left.
He's left her.
Yeah.
He's abandoned.
So she shows up at this house that not only has a lot of meaning, obviously.
Well, it's also confusing because she's never seen the house in a non-tea-induced state.
Sure.
So we have to also consider she doesn't realize at first what the house is. It's a deja vu. It's a memory of tomorrow. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's confusing. You know, it's not all solidified in her head what exactly is going on.
But I think she's also deep down is, and I love that she calls it out, it's like, they knew this place.
Well, that's when she gets into the house.
Yeah.
That's when.
When the blood washes away.
Yeah, the first initial impression.
Yeah, she's like, why this house?
Yeah, why this house? Right. What is it? What's going on? Does he know something that she doesn't know? Has he been in on it? What is happening here?
Well, also... why, and this is the audience should be and probably is asking this question, why is Cole in this house that we've seen over and over again? What does it mean about Cole owning the room that Cassie got stuck in? What does that say? We'll find out. But yeah, it's such a great moment. And then when all the clues and the pieces and Olivia's thing come together,
right?
And I love it. This episode's cut really well too. By it's directed beautifully by Dave Grossman, and it's cut really well by Chris Gay. And I just love that moment where she's like, "They knew this place," and it turns, and then it just cuts to those drums, that aerial shot of Titan, and you're like, "Oh my god!" Just as this story is hitting this apex, you're going to this other story of they're in Titan, they're going to find the witness, and then that's that. That great Deacon line, like, why would you walk towards the weird music? Which I think was your line, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good question. That's just
meaning,
throwing out the goodies.
I think we just had a bunch of different versions some of the line.
Yeah.
And I
sometimes
think
I don't know the line. I'd be like, it needs a Deacon line here. And Todd, the writer,
knows,
and Todd will be like, what about why would you walk
Deacon
towards
the better than
that's,
Todd?
Yeah, I'm the custodian.
Custodian.
But that... Deacon and Jennifer get to be a little bit of the Greek chorus. They get to they get to state in an ironic or pithy way a lot of what the audience is thinking. Yeah, like when Jennifer says, "I'm in a reboot." Like those moments of self-aware where you go, these are the snarky people. So they get to point at the convention or point at the trope or point at the moment, which also then heightens the stakes of the thing because we're still doing it. We're still moving forward.
Yeah, we're still moving forward.
We're not stopping. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted to also ask when Cassie shows up and sees Cole and they finally get to talk at the house before the revelation of them being in love kind of comes out. Does she feel like Cole's given up?
And she says that to
him.
I mean, she calls
him
out on it.
He also has a good point, too. It's like, you know, this paradox was supposed to eventually gobble up all of time, and it hasn't happened, at least not yet. And you're in a coma, and yet we're still here. So the message of the CDC, who knows if causality even makes sense? I'm done trying to figure this out. It hurts my brain, probably hurts everybody's brain. So I'm just going to sit here and chop some wood, try and fix up this nice house, and you go have a good life. I mean, it's a pretty solid plan.
Yeah. I mean, I don't personally. But
what else is he going to do? You know, he probably sent letters to Jones in the future and buried things. And
right.
Yeah.
And he's stuck there. That's right. Well, so what does he do? What are they going to do? I mean, it comes out. It's revealed. All has been said. They're in love. And it's very sweet. Oh, it was really sweet. That was a sweet scene. What did you think, Amanda?
It's funny when we read it at the table read. And I said, I've always known, you know, you're in love with me. I've always known. The whole room was like,
Well, the funny story about that scene, the last argument before they kiss, was Sean and I were in a hotel room in Toronto getting
about
ready
to kiss.
Arguing lover like lovers.
That we
getting
working,
super method and working, just living it out.
Guys, don't get ahead of the joke. We had five different versions of that scene, and so we had to read it out loud. So for about 6 hours, the rooms next to us heard Sean and I going, "Well, now you don't have anything to lose," and kiss. And we'd read it out and be like, "No, it doesn't work." We had like nine different things. It was just this. We were this bizarre couple, constantly getting to this climax, but we're right before we kiss and trying to. And we're like, "No, that sucks." I mean, we wrote it like all day. And then finally, that's the scene we ended up.
Well, and I also like that the way she says it is, you know, "Well, you're in love with me." I mean, you know.
Right. Well, what I did, I've said this, if I've said it once, I've said it 1,000 times. Cassie is not one to express her feelings.
Her vulnerability.
Right. She never does. She buries it. And so.
If I may interrupt, was she like that with Aaron?
They weren't a lovey-dovey couple either. They had sexy talk in the pilot, but we never hear her say "I love you" to anyone ever. And it could have been her upbringing. She lost her mother when she was really young. We could get into all sorts of psychology as to why that is, but you know, she's not not openly revealing about her feelings at any point. But they're having this argument, and the entire argument is Cole pushing her away, telling her to go away, and that's really hurtful. You know, this, they finally have time, everything that they've been working towards, they finally have time, and he's telling her to go away, and she obviously senses that there's more to it, and she says, "It's because you're in love with me." She doesn't yell it, she doesn't accuse him of it. It's almost like she's saying she is as well back to him. And then I wanted to make sure the way that I followed that up when "I've always known" was "I've always known because I am too." Sure. So it was, you know, more between the lines. It's not "I've always known, nanny, nanny, boo, boo."
Right.
It's that "I've always known, I've always felt it too." There's this connection that is inexplicable between the two of us.
And him pushing her away kind of feels reminiscent in a way, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, the Groundhog Day episode, where she kind of says, "Nope,
we can't.
Yeah.
This can't be."
And so now it seems like he's kind of come along.
Well, I think it's also, I don't want a blanket statement say that men get defensive if they've been rebuffed. They often, you know, get uncomfortable or insecure about putting themselves out on a line again. But I think that and that probably goes for any person, male or female, but he's laid it out there before and she's turned him away. Yeah. So he's not putting himself in that position again.
And that's where...
And then, you know, they finally kiss and we, you know, we give the audience something they really want with something they really don't want.
Yeah.
It's our red wedding. And, you know, it was a tough moment to...
Really violent,
tell the
stuff.
Actors, like, this is what's going to happen and...
But sit tight.
You know, but it's
but we still have one more episode.
Yeah.
But they don't have a way to get back to the future.
That's true.
There's no time machine. They're in a lot of trouble.
I found myself at the end of this episode.
And by the way, I just want to say something about another Deegan thing. Because I find the last scene, I've seen it a million times now. Because we're very particular about how we cut together Cassie and Cole. Like, sure. You know, because it could be a jump the shark moment. But in particular, how heartbreaking it is for Ramsey to finally be face to face with the thing he wants and realize, oh my God, I've been duped. And when he turns, I love when Deacon's like, Ramsey. Like, they're like, at the end of all this, face death, they're still just people.
Yeah.
And it's a hard scene to watch, but it all has meaning. Death always has meaning on this show, so you got to stay tuned.
Indeed. And that's I found myself when I was watching this going, wow. And then going, oh my God, we still have a whole another episode.
Yeah.
I mean,
the next episode stars Madeline Stowe.
Right. Which was such a fun from what movie was she in? A couple of things.
Stakeout.
That's the one. Of course. From the film 12 Monkeys, which is a great little Easter egg.
Yes.
For sure.
A little one.
So just a thing. So, all right. Shall we?
Do not. This finale is so big. It's pretty much the biggest thing we've done.
It's huge. It's a big episode.
Huge.
It's a beautiful episode.
I can't even tell you.
And Mexico paid for it.
Greatest episode. All right.
He's wearing a shirt with an elephant with glasses.
It's a nerdy elephant.
I have one that has a wolf because of my name.
Oh, yeah?
With glasses on it. Wolf with a knee that is wearing glasses.
See you next
week.
Let's
get back to how big this episode is.
It is huge.
It's huge.
So as a little tease, because guess what, listeners? I've seen the finale.
You have?
What happens?
And what I will say is, like, it is so big that I was just like, how is this on this show? I mean, it in a great way. This show is gorgeous and stunning and always. I mean, we've talked about it on end, the effects and the storms and everything, and the locations and the time periods. But there's one thing in particular where I was just like, holy shit.
Oh, I know.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's my tease for you guys. There is a dog.
Yep.
And there is definitely at least one holy shit moment. At least one.
There's at least one, but probably about 1,000.
Yeah, but there's definitely more. So don't miss it. Watch it live. Live
tweet.
You
gotta watch this live. Don't get it. I can see the gifts right now of the last scene.
Trust us. All right. With that being said, listen in, rate, review, share all the things. You know where to find us on social media, right? Do we need to do
Let's
that?
Let's all say our own social media handle
at
the same time. One,
okay,
two, three.
American Horror Story. Okay.
Okay, bye.
All right, bye.
Bye.